session number 18580, Reel 5.
Andy Allen, Reel 5.
Well, this lad from Dundee, he was very friendly with the Poles, because he used to give them chocolate, soap, so they could have a decent wash, and cigarettes. And if at any time any of the boys had any extras, gush, we used to call it gush, they used to give it to Dick. And he would pass it on to the Poles, and he received a lot of information from the Poles. But these two Russians, who we were friendly with, they used to come and have a feed with us at dinner time. Everybody was against the Germans, except them who had leanings toward Germany, Sudeten, and people from Sudetenland and things like that. And we used to call them gummy Deutsch, rubber Germans. We said, could you stretch from that side to that side? And we never trust any of them. And this Russians were able to tell us who the most likely people were who would pass anything on to Germans, because they knew. But we did we used to give them cigarettes, and we used to rip the cigarettes off and keep the shag and give them a packet of papers to roll their own cigarettes. Used to give them chocolate, but we made sure that they eat the chocolate there.
Why?
Well, if they'd been caught with chocolate, that was sabotage. That was death. If they're caught with cigarettes in the pack, that was death. You never seen them again. See, it wasn't a case of, we'll put you in front of the judge and the jury and we'll see if you're guilty or not. It was just a case of taking them around the back of the hut and one behind the head, and they're gone.
Did the Polish underground attempt to get you to work with them in undermining the Germans?
No, they did, but they did it in such a way as we could not, and they could not, blame one another. Oh yes. It was a case in the ammunition factory there, where the Polish underground held up as Germans come in for arms, and they held up the whole convoy, this Polish underground. I'm going hearsay now, but I believe it. Kept the Germans, went down to the armament place, they had the German bells to convince them, and they loaded up and drove out, and the arms went away missing. They left the German lorries not there, but the arms went adrift.
Were any of your POW group punished by the Germans?
Oh yes, they did it. They did it in such a way. They maybe hold back your letters. See, it was a time when we were mourning to the about every 4 or 5, maybe 6 months, as a man used to come from Switzerland, from the Red Cross. And he used to come in and ask if there was any complaints. Well, by and large, the people like me said, what the devil is going to get giving him a complaint? He can do nothing about it. And he couldn't. But he used to go through the action, make a big fuss, go to Charlie Coward, Nanny Porters, the medical officer, and say, any complaints? And they gave him a list of complaints, but there was never nothing done about it. There's never nothing done.
And Did you ever talk to the Jewish concentration camp victims?
Yeah. Oh, I worked with them. They worked with us. We dropped the wagons down, and they come in about with wheelbarrows to take the stuff away. Oh, aye.
What type of things would you speak to them about?
Well, they were terrified. They were terrified. When we had parcels, we didn't want the German food. So we used to get German food in what they called kibbles. We got what size? Kept hot. Well, the German food was turnips, potatoes, and maybe about vegetable and gravy. Well, when we were flush with parcels, we used to feed the Jew boys with the stuff that was sent up for us. And then the Jew boys knew this, and they used to watch, and when they would say, come on in, you never seen nothing vanish so quick as that stuff we gave them. Because they had nothing. They had absolutely nothing. They were fighting for survival, or fighting to live, which is a very, very big thing. Some of them had on their feet, dead of winter, what they called fußlappens. That was any sort of old rag, bag, anything they could wrap around their feet instead of having boots, I guess, or clogs. Quite a lot of them got frostbitten in the feet with that. I'd say a hell of a lot of them.
Did you ever get to know any of them by name?
Yes. You've touched a...
I think you've forgotten the names, but it may come back to you later.
Yeah, they may come back later. Every nationality was in this concentration camp had a different coloured star. Whether the star was a full star or a half star, green, brown and red for the Czechs. Every person except the British had a different coloured star on there and a number underneath. Then when they used to come round and select them for going to gas chamber, they used to take the numbers. They had them on parade, and they used to come down, and they used to tap him, the S doctor that you come down, used to tap him on the shoulder. That one's gone, that one's gone, that one's gone. This was on a Tuesday. And we pleaded with the Jews, we says, we'll give you knives, because our boys are making quite a lot of weapons, using it for cutting up and that, but a knife's a knife, it can do a lot of damage. And when we said to the Jews, look, one Jew, one German, take him with you. But they were so brainwashed and browbeaten that they wouldn't do it. So we used to say, where's so-and-so gone? Oh, gas chamber. They'd openly said it, oh, gas chamber. That's from the Thursday. They were selected on a Tuesday and gassed on a Thursday. And they were burnt at Birkenau. Will I spell it, yeah?
No, I know how to spell it.
Birkenau. They were burnt at Birkenau. And if the gas chambers are so busy, if we come out in the middle of the night out of the hut for any reason, we used to get black stuff from our face, but arms, and this was them burning them, and the wind taking it to us. It was a long time before we knew what it was, but the medical officer told us, he says, that's out of the Birkenau. Stop a minute.
Did you ever come across any resistance by the Jewish victims against the Germans?
No. Conniving to try and live. Conniving to try and live. But you see, if there had been any resistance, they just killed them on the spot. There was no messing about with them. They would have just killed them on the spot. Maybe I'm being a bit hard on them, but that's how I seen it.
But the British POWs didn't have a coloured star or emblem on them.
Oh, no, no, no. We have our uniform for two reasons. Our boys, if they escaped, went out in civvy clothes. But the civvy clothes were above the uniforms. Because underneath were still prisoners. Still soldiers and prisoners. If we take my uniform off, we were saboteurs. And you know what happened to saboteurs, they just shot you.
Did you ever make a break for it yourself?
No, I was part of the brains behind people who were making a break. We had escape committees, and we used to get different things. Barter, down the factory. We used to barter for a shirt, maybe. Barter for a jacket. And barter for everything. But we had an escape company set up, and I was part of the, well, a little part. I was a little part of there. But then again, it was a risk there, because if they'd found who was supplying the stuff, they were dead. Literally, it may be sound hard to you. Maybe sound hard to everybody, but if they found out anything any time, you never seen that man again. He just vanished.
Do you know what dates you were at Auschwitz?
Yes. I went up. We started walking on the 21st of January, and we walked. Well, the Germans told us we'd walked 1,100 kilometres.
But how long had you been before you started walking at Auschwitz?
I was 19 months there. 19 months. Taken prisoner of war, 23rd of June. Italy, 17 months, prisoner of war. Auschwitz, 19 months. So you can come back 19 months from January.
January 45.
And that's when we were taken right from Verona. We didn't go to a holding camp. See, Stalag 8B was a holding camp. And when the Germans wanted so many labourers for work, they applied to the British man in charge of the Stalag. They wanted 40 labourers. And we were supposed to be paid for that. The British prisoner of war was supposed to be paid for that, for doing his work to the Germans. I never got paid. I don't know of anybody ever got paid.
And when you did your daily work, what time would you start and what time would you finish?
Oh, head count was, you had a head count in the camp at 4 o'clock in the morning to see are nobody missing. And then you go back in the camp, try and snatch a sleep again, and at 5 o'clock, a quarter past five, you're out on parade. And then they used to count you, shout some of your names to see if you're there, and then walk into the factory about 10 minutes to six in the morning. And then you were in the factory, locked in, and the German guards, well, they just vanished. They went back to some of the big huts and had a sleep. See, they were out at that time in the morning as well. So I don't suppose they liked it any more than we did.
But to what extent could you just muck about in the factory?
Oh, we never did nothing else. We were on a Strafarbeit commando, what they call a Strafarbeit commando. That was troublemakers. STREF, Arbeit, commando. We were troublemakers. And as such, they used to come down, detail the jobs that they wanted done, which had no hope of getting done in that day, and then they used to go and leave us. And then they would round us up at night, put us into the lines, and march us back to the camp. We went down as a body, we went down as a unit to the camp, to the factory, but they used to come back as a disjointed unit. Sometimes half of them would be half up the road, half the lads would be half up the road, and we'd just be forming up here, and maybe some coming up behind us. Are you following what I'm saying?
Yes.
Come up behind us, and then we walked it. We had our guards for there, our postings for there, and we would walk out up the camp. And at the camp, they used to be in the ranks, and they used to check us there. But any time that I was in escape, and I've seen several, I'm a small man, but I was a big man escaping. When his number came up, I took his number. So they're looking for another man. They were getting one number to fit me, and the man that the number fitted was out, maybe 5 feet, 6 feet. All this we did.
So you didn't really achieve much in the way of work for the Germans?
Oh, no. We destroyed more than we worked. Chalky White and I, this miser, as Baumeister, he asked if we knew anything about machines. Chalky says, well, kid, I'm on, Andy. We said, yes. So what does he do? He gives us a file each and tells us that he wants this piece of piston knocked out a bit. What does Chalky and I do? Instead of going the normal way and keeping the roll around like that, we filed flat pieces in it. That job didn't last, I can tell you. He cried, sabotage. He said, no, we'll carry on working. Yeah. And he said to himself, stupid English swines.
And you were working for R.G. Farben?
R.G. Farben, E.G. Farben.
In the methanol factory?
In the methanol factory.
Was it a big factory?
Well, it was about 5 kilometers by 5 kilometers.
How did you know you were working for R.G. Farben?
Because the numbers, the big things were over the doors. I forget the number now, I.G. Farben, I.G. Farben Industry, and the number of the plant.
What was the methanol used for?
Diesel. They had margarine coming out of there, they had margarine coming out of their coal, and they had methanol, and they had a cleaning fluid, methanol cleans, but they had another cleaning fluid beside that. Oh, they had a terrific amount of stuff coming out of coal.
I was interested in what you were saying about the British and American air raids because of the Jews saying that, some Jews nowadays say that Auschwitz should have been bombed, but it sounds as though it was bombed.
Auschwitz was bombed. Three raids. Three raids only three. But Auschwitz was bombed. You can tell any of the Jews that.
And were all three raids in daytime?
Daytime. We got one Russian raid. They said it was a Russian raid anyway. But we didn't know. It was one night, I don't know whether the planes had got the wrong reading, or the wrong place, I know. But we got a night raid once. But things were getting very close then. Things were getting very, very close then. You see, when the Russians come up, they were trying to work a pincer. But the pincer, they couldn't get close. It was 14 kilometers. So what the Germans did, the Russians were lobbing stuff in to this pincer, where the pincer movement couldn't get closed. And then we were in the middle. All the armor and everything was outside. This is when we were walking. All the armor and everything was outside. So the Germans thought to themselves, well, if the Russians are doing that, we'll transfer the prisoners of war to the outside. Put our armor up the middle. But the Russian knew. The Russian knew this. So instead of putting it into the middle leg, where we were, where we'd been before, and taken out and put along the sides, they started lobbing the stuff into the middle.
So when you marched from the camp, was it just British POWs or others?
No, they gave the Jew boy 3 days of a start. Give the Jew boys 3 days of a start, and we left 3 days later.
Why do you think they let the Jews go before the POWs?
Because we were extremely fit as far as they were concerned, and they gave the Jew boys 3 days of a start for us to catch up, right? But they took us away separate ways. I was a case once. When they used to say 1 hour's march and 10 minutes pause, that was a rest. They give you a 10 minutes rest every hour, right? So for a start, some of our boys, their feet were bad, because they hadn't been using them the same as way as we were in the factory. And they used to take horses down. You know that Polish carts that way. I don't know. I can't remember what they call them. They used to take them down. And if our boys got bad, they used to put our boys on the cart and the horse take them away. Take them away to the hospital or farther on or give them a lift somewhere. They didn't do away with them, not any kind. But Andy Porteous, he said to us, he took us one night. We used to walk 3 days and 1 day off to recover. Andy Porter says, look, how are you feeling, boys? We're all right, Andy. And he took a whole lot. He says, right, the Germans are feeling the pinch. We are fitter than them. He says, now he says, I'm going to go up and suggest the Mieser was the Sergeant Major, German Sergeant Major, M-E-I-S-E-R. Mieser was a German Sergeant Major. Andy Porteous went up to Mieser, and he said, look, he said, instead of a 1 hour march and 10 minutes pause, he says, what are we doing? 2 hours march and 5 minutes pause. Oh, they were all for it. Eh? Didn't realize what Andy Porteous was doing. We walked the Germans off their feet because we had boots. Our feet was all right. At the finish of the rest day, my wife bought me a Wilkinson's nail clipper, and I used to clip the boys' nails. In fact, I had a bigger nail clipping at the finish than the doctor had for his. So that's how that man should know me. That man should know me.
And did you eventually catch up with the Jews?
Yeah. Yeah. Dead of winter. When the Jews went for the colonnade, yeah, and sat down for it. I'm being a bit dirty now, but when they sat down to have a baby call on age, they used to freeze. Their knees used to freeze. Their body would freeze, right? So the Germans used to count them. Maybe one missing. They used to go in the, we used to go in the forest, where it was, and they go in the forest, see him there, back of the head.
So this was the shooting of Jewish stragglers.
See, a lot of people say, Jews, Jews, Jews. But as far as I was concerned, he wasn't only a Jew to me. He was a human being. He was a man. He was the same, made of the same stuff as I was. And I felt for them. I really did feel for them. There's times when I could have kicked them up the backside. The things they did. Stupid things they did.
What kind of stupid things?
Oh, well, they'd stand there and be counted. And they knew they were going to be done. And we used to say, as I told you before, take one German with you. I used to lose the head a bit with them because I tried to force them to do it. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. I don't know. But I felt for them. And I felt for the kids. I'll tell you one Jew I didn't feel for. When the Jews came in from Austria, there were Jewish kapos, what they called kapos, C-A-P-O. They had little boys attending them in Jewish uniform, Jewish boys. We don't know whether they were lesbians, boofters, or what. But we never liked to see this Jewish kapos, the way they took the boys about. And several times, we thought to ourselves, if we get a chance of that capo will be dead. We never got a chance, we're too fly. But they came down with a spotless uniform, and they were supposed to be negotiating for the Jews. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I don't know. But I just had that feeling myself. That they were, of course, were fine for survival. I can understand that. Maybe I'd have done the same if I'd been in their place. But they were fighting for their life. But when we seen them with the little boys, and the little boys in the Jewish uniform, the capo had the hat. Capo had his number on there. And the little kids had the number on there. But they used to come down and they're supposed to be negotiating. I never trust them. Well, I never trusted them. And I know that a lot of my mates never trusted them.
What made you think there might be a homosexual relationship between the capos and the boys?
Little things that they...